Hello, welcome to the Comic Con Shorts. Now we'll be talking about our favorites, Batman Origins. Of course, you know my co-host, JD from Saskatoon.
Good evening.
Also, this is Red Ink.
What's up?
All right, so yes, our favorite Batman Origins. After our very lovely discussion about Superman Origins, we're talking about our favorite Batman Origins. So this time we're going to start with Red. Red, your favorite Batman Origins.
I don't fucking know. I'm not the biggest Batman fan. I just keep it simple. And the simplest thing is just Martha and Thomas Wayne get shot in a fucking alley, and Bruce goes crazy, wanders the world, and gets trained by ninjas and becomes Batman.
Okay.
Well, one of my... Honestly, and it's... I just... Because I saw it when I was nine, Batman 89 Origin has always been one of my favorites.
You know how to dance as like on the pale moonlight?
Yes, thank you. I've always liked the idea of that version. Not overall, it's not the best origin, but it's my favorite. Because I love the idea of the Joker being... The man at the other end of that gun.
I think it connects them too much.
Well, I enjoyed that connection. But
it's, when it comes to Batman, Joker being his origin doesn't make sense, because every one of Batman's villains encompasses something having to do with Batman. Two-Face is his duality. Catwoman is his thief nature that he's part of. Penguin is his...
His aristocracy.
And it keeps going on. Everyone, what Joker is the mystery of Batman. And Joker himself has to be a mystery in order to encompass that. He cannot have an origin. You cannot give him an origin, or you fucking ruin him.
Well, he can't have an origin other than taking a header into the Ace Chemicals tank.
And even then, that should be ambiguous of, it could be him, it could not be him, it most likely is him, don't commit to it.
Well, and again, it's just the tangent off of the Joker origin. I think just in and of itself, Joker, like I said, whoever takes that header into the chemical bath, that's just simple and to the point. Whether it breaks him and it makes him crazy, or he just gets a really bad dye job, that in and of itself is as much of an origin of the Joker as we really need. Because like Red said, we want that mystery. This guy is either this failed comedian that was trying to provide for his wife that got forced into wearing the Red Hood getup, or he was one of the three different flavors of origin we got from Heath Ledger in The Dark Knight, you know? And like I said, my favorite origin of Batman is Batman 89, with that connectivity between the Joker and Batman. But I think the best origin is out of the original golden age, Thomas and Martha Wayne take Bruce to see Mark of Zorro, though there have been several times over the years that movie has changed in various forms of media. And they go down the wrong alley, and two gunshots, broken pearls, lifetime war on crime. That's the best origin. But it's how – it's stuff just beyond the alley that factors into his origin, which makes it a lot of fun. We kind of talked about – in the last episode, talking about whether Ma and Pa Kent whether we liked it better, whether they are alive or dead when Clark becomes Superman. I always liked the idea that it's not whether or not Batman knows it was Joe Chill that killed his parents. It's that he never caught the guy. That guy was never caught. And that's this huge factor in fueling Batman's war on crime, is he's always looking for the guy that killed his parents. And depending on how you take that that path, you either end up with the Batman being a complete asshole to everyone other, or sometimes including everyone in the Bat family and the greater DC universe, which we saw through the 90s and into the early 2000s. Or you have where, he knows it's Joe Chill, and Joe Chill was caught and punished for the crime of killing his parents, but uses that as a galvanizing force to drive him forward to prevent any other family from suffering a loss like that. But how about you, Ben? What's your favorite Batman origin?
That's a good question. In print, I would have to say my favorite overall encompassing Batman origin would have to be Year One, simply because it took everything that existed prior. It condensed it down into a singular story, beginning, middle, end, and it made it seamless without adding too much bulk to it. It trimmed a lot of bulk out of it. Because if you look at the previous origins prior to that point, there was a lot of bulk. There was a lot of extra bulk, and it was just, or there was too little bulk. Because if you look at the original Golden Age Batman origin, there was just, you know, Joe Chill, I'll become the Bat, and a couple of panels of peak human fitness and Denny's Batman, and there was no real explanation about how Batman got the skills other than he just read some books and lifted a dumbbell. The world tour really didn't exist per se in the Golden Age. It was kind of like backfilled in the Silver Age somewhat, the world tour.
One of the things I want to point out is the allegory, the biblical allegories.
Yes.
Superman is Moses.
Yes.
He's a child that has been taken from a family that has a tragic ending, sent down the river and picked up by somebody and raised to be a good person.
Yes.
That's basically Moses, even though Moses was a prince and he had to become a better person later on.
Yes.
And Batman is a Jesus Christ allegory, believe it or not. It's because he has the same thing as Jesus Christ. He has this moment of clarity. Well, not clarity, but this moment where something shows him his path in life. Where Jesus Christ, it's the Archangel Gabriel comes and tells him, yeah, you're the Son of God, and you're going to have to sacrifice yourself for people in 30 years from now. On Batman, it's Joe Chill kills his parents, and 30 years pass. Suddenly, Jesus Christ is 30 years old. Suddenly, Batman's 30 years old.
Yeah. As far as the world tour goes, reading a lot of Golden Age reprints and Silver Age reprints, I always had this feeling that they, in the Golden and Silver Age, they treat the world tour like it was 5 years of college, you know.
That's like, the thing is, in again, Golden Age, the world tour was not a thing, really. It was basically three panels. It was like one panel Bruce Wayne reading a book, one panel Bruce Wayne lifting a dumbbell, and then one panel, Bruce Wayne in the Batman suit. That was the world tour in the Golden Age. Go ahead.
Sorry. I was saying they're limited by the way the industry was at the time, but I'm just saying, like, it's very simply put, but just overall, and even with some of the fill-in that we got years later, it wasn't the, like, 10 years that Batman was gone from, like, I think he was like 16, 17 generally is confirmed. Now, 16, 17, he leaves on this world tour. He's gone for like 8, 9, 10 years traveling the world. Very much reflected in like the Batman Begins origin, where eventually he's legally declared dead by Rutger Hauer as he's trying to take over Wayne Enterprises. But yeah, the Golden Silver Age, like, it's a very simple origin, and just, like I said, over the years, we're led to assume that, you know, he studied really hard and he went off to become Batman.
Yes, but again, like I said, Silver Age backfilled the world tour quite a bit. Great example of this is in the Silver Age. There were a couple of different stories that alluded that Batman had some travels before he was Batman, where he met different crime fighters that became like the Batman around the world was a story that came up where Batman had other. They weren't literally other Batman, like a Batman wearing a sombrero, but stuff like that. Like there was a Spanish crime fighter that was like a. You remember this story, don't you? Batman Around the World, Silver Age story.
The Batman of many nations.
Yes, yes. I'm bringing this up because freaking Grant Morrison like did a modern version of this during the whole the Batman of. The one that wore the fucking multicolored costume thing that he did when Grant Morrison was taking drugs a decade ago.
The Batman of Zur-En-Arr?
Yes.
Which was his literally created a backup human operating system in his mind in case his first personality was ever compromised.
Yes. Like I said, Grant Morrison, when he's taking his drugs, he's taking some pretty fucking good drugs.
Yeah. Now, when you talk about the origin of the Golden Silver Age, I love how they originally in, I think it was late Golden Age, early Silver Age, where they introduced his Uncle Philip, who was his legal guardian, but for a time entrusted his care to Mrs. Chilton, who was revealed to be the mother of Joe Chill, and she felt such guilt over her son taking Bruce's parents that she dedicated herself to, you know, raising this boy right and such like that. And and it comes from my favorite episode of Batman Brave and the Bold, like where they start to fill in the origin of Silver Age, as we're talking about, Ben, like how he has that flashback of seeing his mom and dad in their winged creature costumes. And, you know, Thomas Wayne has that really gaudy looking like proto Batman suit.
Yes,
and it goes. Sorry.
Yes, that was another. I think that was that Golden Age or Silver Age where they made Thomas Wayne the original quote Batman.
Well, looking at this one, it's September of 1956, so firmly in the Silver Age, I would say.
Yes, yes.
And also, if you haven't watched that episode of Brave and the Bold, folks, Chill of the Night. Thomas and Martha Wayne are voiced by Julie Newmar and the late great Adam West as Martha and Thomas Wayne. And then you got Kevin Conroy's Phantom Stranger and Mark Hamill, who I didn't realize until watching a video about Arkham Knight earlier today. His name literally in the middle of it spells out Arkham. I know it's not a conspiracy or it's not trying to prove it. It's just like he's got Arkham in his name. No wonder he was the Clown Prince of Crime. And from the Silver Age till year one, more or less, his origin with some subtle flavorings here and there pretty much remains the same. Now, if you go any of the origins past year one, I don't think the origin stories play necessarily as well as, you know, year one and before. And for the essential factor of the pulp stylings of this origin, whether you go from the original Golden Age origin or year one, there's this pulp aesthetic about, you know, dead parents, training, he's wearing a cape and he's fighting a crime. That's why Batman, much like Superman, had so many imitators and copycats throughout the years.
Well, the one thing that I have to add about year one, that year one added to it was, I wouldn't say year one added to it, because technically Silver Age started this trend. What do you know about the origin of the Robin costume?
I know it was from one of the flashback tales of Batman's origin where Bruce put it on to apprentice with this famous detective.
Yes. See, that's one thing that that in the original origins of Batman, before Bruce Wayne was Batman, he had to have failed. He had to have failed in an attempt to be a costume vigilante before he discovered Batman. And that was an idea. And yes, and the idea is, in the comics at least, the Robin costume was one of the first attempts. After, you know, Post-Crisis dropped the Robin costume being the first attempt, but in the Year One comic book, the first attempt was Bruce Wayne trying to act like, in, for best, for lack of a better term, an undercover cop. You know, he was casing the worst street in Gotham with a really bad undercover outfit, grime on his face, a really bad looking scar, and really dirty clothes, and he got in a big fight with Selina Kyle and a bunch of prostitutes, got beat up, and he got a knife in his knee. That was his failed attempt in the Year One. That set a precedent that from that point on, every story since then has the failed attempt, which I think is important with Batman Origins from that point on. It's Mask of the Phantasm, which we brought up in an earlier episode, had Bruce Wayne do a failed attempt where he wore essentially a baklava and a utility belt and a sweater. That was his failed attempt. He came out with a lot of bruises. Batman Begins, same thing. He wore a baklava, utility belt, and a vest. You know, the failed attempt became a component of the Batman origin because of Year One. And I think that's something that people sort of underestimate about Year One's impact in the Batman mythos. The failed attempt. The Batman before Batman. The pre-birth of Batman.
That just sounds wrong when you say pre-birth.
Oh?
Yeah, and I mean, when you look at Batman Origins to, you know, step away from Bruce for a minute, I kind of like the idea, it's not the greatest story in the world, but how they had Batman in Flashpoint, and it was his dad, and Bruce died in the alley, and Martha went mad and became the Joker. But, you know, it also goes to characterizing Gotham City somewhat, that there, it doesn't matter where you are in the multiverse, there's always going to be a Batman. And Thomas Wayne Batman, like Flashpoint Batman, just never left the pulp genre. Like, he goes out with, you know, the grappling hook and rope and a utility belt and 245s, and very much more in the line of the Shadow, which Batman's creators totally ripped off, and no one can deny that at this point. But I think one of our favorite between the three of us, I would assume that we all love, is the origin of Batman Beyond. How, you know, after years of fighting crime, Bruce has a heart attack while wearing the Beyond suit for the first time, and uses a gun to scare off a criminal, and, you know, realize after violating his most sacred rule, he quits being Batman until, like, 20 years later, Terry McGinnis loses his father in an origin very much like Bruce's. And this is before we get the whole Project Cadmus,
yeah,
created Terry sort of thing. Just ignoring the Justice League episode, just how similar that happened. Like, with Terry losing his dad and becoming the new Batman to avenge his father's death, and going on to become, like, one of the most notable crime fighters in the future DC animated universe.
You know, that narrows it down.
Yes.
I like
that line.
You kill my... Also, say what you will about Will Friedle, because I know there's a lot of people who just don't like his voice. They like his work on Batman Beyond fine, like a few people, but everyone I talk to agrees, like, where you have him fighting Mr. Fix, who's voiced by the great George Takei, and he's like, you're pretty strong for some punk who thinks he's been. It's like, I am Batman. And that's a great moment, and that kind of completes, in in my estimation, I think that completes his origin, you know, where he takes it for himself and he escapes and, you know, goes on to have all those great adventures. But one of the articles I shared with Ben and Red folks here is a list of a few alternate origins of Batman in other comic stories. One of which, the origin that they created for Batman in the third Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles crossover, where because of multiversal shenanigans where the, and these are both, all three of these series are in canon with the IDW Ninja Turtles comic and the current DC run of Batman, is Krang decides he wants to kill Ninja Turtles everywhere, you know, a la TMNT Forever. So he creates a robot body based off of the Anti-Monitor's armor, and cosmic shenanigans force the combination of Batman's and the Ninja Turtles universe, where he has Daredevil's origin, where in they go to see the movie, Thomas and Martha Wayne buy Bruce these four little turtles because he wants pets, and he names them all, you know, Leonardo, Donatello, Michelangelo, Raphael, and then they're run over by the TCRI truck that's carrying the ooze, and Bruce disappears into the sewers and grows up alongside the turtles and Splinter, who teaches them all ninjutsu. I just love that origin because it's fucking insane.
That's, it's a bit much.
It's much. Insane. In it's comics, membrane. Ben.
It's been in the membrane. But back to what I was saying. Do you agree with my assessment of the failed attempt being an important part of the added mythos to Batman?
It's a defining moment. Like, he needs that moment of, I'm almost there, but not quite yet. Because I believe it's in year one where, you know, he gets back to the manor. He's sitting in the study, bleeding out. He's got his hand on that bell to call Alfred, and he's like, oh God, like, what do I do? And he has, criminals are a cowardly and superstitious lot. And another essential element, I think, of the Batman origin is that moment where he's thinking about his life choices and the bat flies through the window, lands on the bust of Shakespeare, and just glowering at Bruce. And then in that moment, it crystallizes for him what he has to become in order to see him fulfill the vow he made to his parents that he's going to spend the rest of his life warring on crime. That's it, Father. I shall become a bat.
It's that what it is goes over some people's heads. The whole point, what Ben is saying, the failed attempt, especially in year one, the point is this: as a man, nobody fears him. And it's written by fucking
Frank Miller.
Frank Miller, so lowest of lower fucking prostitutes, and prostitutes kick his fucking ass.
Before he lost his head, too.
Yeah, like, nobody, as a man, nobody gives a shit. Nobody fears him. So he has to become something else. He has to become feared. He has to become a supernatural creature. Something, as super criminals are superstitious and cowardly lot, something for them to be superstitious about. So yes, he becomes the bat. That is the missing equation. Like, he could become the cat, he could become the mouse, he could become the fucking rat, who the fuck knows, but
the otter.
Yeah, he could become the otter man. It just, as long as he represents something that is not just a man, that is more than a man, that's when they'll fear him. That's when they won't fuck around with him. And that's the whole point.
Yeah, and that's another thing I loved in, like, how much was lifted for the script in Batman Begins from year one. Like, that moment on the plane with Bruce and Alfred as he's flying back to, you know, resume his life as Bruce and become Batman. So when you I forget how the line goes. It's you dedicate yourself to an, as a man, I can be stopped, but as an idea.
Yeah. Well, there's also the scene where Bruce as the guy wearing the baklava, you know, just, you know, runs out of the police headquarters and Gordon chases after him with like five other cops and he just watch him jump off the roof and he's like, just some nut. And nobody's afraid of him.
Yeah.
And, you know, you go back to, like I said, Mask of the Phantasm, and you have young Bruce, you know, stopping the truck robbery with just a utility belt and a claw hammer, and nobody's afraid of him. And at the end of the day, you know, great scene there, by the way, when Bruce in Mask of the Phantasm puts on the first Batman outfit and he slips on the mask. You know, Alfred visibly like is horrified by the look the first time.
It's like, oh shit.
Yeah. You know, like I said, the first attempt, the failed attempt does not exist as a narrative device until year one. And Red's around the money. No one feared him until no one feared him until that. And it's important. It's an integral part of the story.
And fear, not only Bruce's fear, but you know the fear that he realizes he has to foster in the criminal element to become effective.
Yes, it's an integral part of the story, and it's important that people understand what it means. And it's not just that. It's there's so many other things that Frank Miller with Year One, you know, he trimmed a lot of fat, he condensed things, he streamlined it, and showed this transformation of Gotham from you know a corrupt town run by the old mob to just the hints, just the beginnings of turning into this really weird town that's gonna just start transforming into this place with the rise of the supervillain, with just that end shot about, you know, someone poisoning the reservoir, calls himself the Joker.
Yeah.
I don't know which comic it is, but there's a great line where Batman... No, it's actually Long Halloween.
Yes.
Where Batman... No, Bruce is talking to the, like, Falcone, the mob boss. And he says, there was a time when Gotham was just ruled by the mob and everything was okay. And suddenly Batman shows up and all these weirdos that used to exist on the fringes of the city that would never dare to fucking come in are everywhere now because of Batman.
And that's one of the... I mean, we've certainly talked about, argued at length about this on the show previously about, you know, whether or not on some level Batman is responsible for a lot of the villains. He's not responsible for all the villains. Like, Penguin was always going to be Penguin. Like, Oswald Cobblepot was always going to be a shitheel like that. But you see Bruce, you know, quote-unquote prancing around Gotham City in his tights, and that gave rise to guys like the Riddler or Calendar Man or guys that he's directly involved in, like the Joker, like Mr. Freeze, maybe. But, you know, Bruce's choice to become Batman had so many far-reaching consequences beyond just him trying to make Gotham City a safe place to live, like stuff that he probably never considered. Now, Red?
To me, I like the way Falcone explains it, that because the mob kept them out, there was always supervillains, there was always these fucking weirdos that always existed. But because the mob controlled Gotham, he kept them out. But Batman led the way. Batman shone the light and is like, okay, it's safe to come in here and cause fucking trouble. didn't create them. They were just always there and waiting.
Just looking it up here, there was that one great line with Falcone in Batman Begins about fearing what you don't understand. And when it goes to, again, going back to Batman using fear, like the fact that one of the worst gangsters in Gotham City had a hand in forming what eventually became, you know, his nemesis like that. But I was going to ask you, like, you know, I said, like, that Batman Ninja Turtles origin is one of my favorites just because it's insane. Like, some of the, like, you, again, not a huge Batman fan, like you said, but, you know, some of the different stylings of Batman's origin, is there any of those that kind of stick out for you in terms of, you know, just ringing true for the mythos or something you just kind of loved for, like, the visual aspect, such like that?
When it comes to Batman's origin, there's nothing that I love. Like, I am sorry. I get sick of watching Thomas and Martha Wayne getting shot in a fucking alley. Every single fucking movie, every single TV series, I gotta watch them get shot in a fucking alley.
He's done with the murder porn already.
Yeah, I get that. Now, as far as Thomas and Martha Wayne dying, yeah, like, that's... as much as that's like Uncle Ben and Spider-Man's origin. Like, you're just tired of seeing that happen, which is why I love in the Adam West Batman, you know, Batman 66, there's maybe two or three times throughout that series that he references his parents, and he doesn't say they're dead. You know, what happened to my parents? And it was this galvanizing force for him. I mean, you can do stuff like that, but sometimes it's like you said, like we get the origin. Batman and Spider-Man have been around for so long and are so well known throughout the world. You know, that's why when we got Tom Holland in the MCU, it worked without hearing with great power there must always come great responsibility. And haven't even mentioned Uncle Ben. In fact, the first time they mentioned Uncle Ben in the MCU was in the Marvel Zombies episode of What If. But... like, you can reference without specifically referencing stuff like that, but...
well, that's not true. They did mention Uncle Ben in Far From Home. As Peter's packing up, he shuts his suitcase, and there's the initials BP
on the suitcase. Okay, but I meant, like, actually saying the words Uncle Ben is what I meant.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. There's something said that for being... tasteful about it, you know?
Yeah. Now, I mean, to move away from Thomas and Martha Wayne, because, like, we're all kind of sick of talking about that. We know that's part of the origin. When you get into the world tour, there's a couple notable names. Like, we know at some point in a couple of the origins that I've read from, like, the 70s, I believe, there was this villainous martial artist character named the O-Sensei, who featured pretty prominently with, I believe, the Richard Dragon Kung Fu Fighter stories.
Yes.
And, yeah, Bruce was trained on him. And there's a couple other characters we mentioned with, I forget if it was in year one, but it was an origin story drawn, like I said, by John Byrne. I can't remember the name of it, but this, you know, detective that I wish I could remember the name of the character that he trained with, but... the one character that Bruce trained with that is essential in his origin that helped kind of focus his drive was Henri Ducard, who, you know, most people know the character from Liam Neeson's playing him in Batman Begins. It's a character I first came across, not in a Batman comic, but in, like, I think it's the second Robin miniseries that came out in the 90s, like the second series featuring Tim Drake.
Where
the Chuck Dixon one where he's trained by Ducard and then he goes off to fight the blind martial artist King Snake, who's like trying to poison all of London with some biotoxin encased in a block of salt. But Ducard was referred to as a manhunter, like some weird I don't think it's an actual professional title, but he was like this weird mixture of a detective and a bounty hunter. You know, all the skills of both and none of the subtlety of either. And some versions of Ducard come off as like this kind of jovial, you know, fun-loving uncle type of character who, while being a very hard man, kind of cares for Bruce. And others, they treat him as this being two steps removed from being one of the villains that Batman is going to chase down, you know, later in life. So as far as like guys he's training in that world tour, there, what elements of the world tour do you think guys kind of are essential for Bruce's transformation into Batman?
Well, have any of you read Earth One Batman?
Parts. I read the first volume.
Because in that series, there is no world tour. Bruce Wayne's parents are killed. Alfred takes him in, and Alfred trains him. Alfred isn't...
Alfred's MI6.
No, he's not. Not in Earth One.
Okay.
He is a military veteran.
SAS.
He's a military veteran. He's trained to kill and stuff like that. And he trains Bruce. And okay. The whole thing about Earth One is, because there's no world tour, Bruce fucks up a lot. Like he's talking to Jim Gordon. He's like, you know, you're in a fucking open crime scene, right? You're stepping on evidence right now. Your fucking dumb leather gloves are spreading fingerprints around, are ruining fingerprints. You're not much of a detective. And Bruce takes that to heart and then teaches himself to become a detective.
I mean, learning the finer points of, you know, detection, escapology, that's another one of his trainers that I loved when he goes in the world tour, at least in the later years, like past year one, like he trained with Zatara, father of...
Well, let's talk about Zatara, because that's something else we have to bring up. Zatara training Bruce was technically not in the original world post-crisis world tour. The person who contributed that nugget was actually Bruce Timm and Paul Dini.
Yeah.
Because they basically threw that in into an episode of the Batman the Animated Series. Because, like, what if the person who taught Batman how to pick locks was Zatara? And they're like, and what if he had a romance with Zatanna when they were teenagers? And they're like, oh, and then, yes.
It was more like Paul Dini's like, you know who I really like? Zatara and her fishnets. Let's get her in the series. How are we going to do that? Well, her dad trained Bruce how to escape, blah, blah, blah.
Yes, you're right. But my point is that's how he became one of the teachers in the world tour. That's how.
Yeah.
And before then,
that in years later.
Before then, he was never on the list. Afterwards, yeah. That's how he got on the list.
And there, I don't know if it's currently in the canon, but I know there's a couple of times they mentioned how Bruce trained for a time with Thaddeus Brown, who was like Mr. Miracle before Scott Free of Apocalypse became Mr. Miracle. So, I mean, I always loved that aspect of Batman. Like, goes around the world. He becomes like this, you know, peak human athlete, chemist, biologist, inventor, race car driver, escape artist, and like all these skills that just basically train whatever. And I think that in tellings of the origin after year one, eventually that stuff is just put by the wayside. Like, they mention it once or twice, and everyone seems to concentrate on Batman being like the deadliest mofo with martial arts skills since Bruce Lee. Like, they just seem to lean on how Batman can kick ass in 107 different languages.
Yes.
Which is part of the character, but I, again, with the origins and even writing Batman, a lot of writers tend to concentrate on the action and, you know, the physical more than the cerebral.
It depends on whoever's writing
it. Yeah.
It depends
According to some writers, some Batman is like he's the top three greatest martial artists. And some of them are like, no, he's not. He's up there. He's maybe top 10, but he's not top three.
Well,
and some of them are like, oh, he's the best martial artist.
Well, the other and others say if he has prep time, he can beat anyone in the top 10.
That's just anyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the one thing that to keep in mind is for a while, writers tried to be vague about the World Tour because post-crisis writers tried to at least agree there's 10 destinations in the World Tour that they have to agree definitely happen. The rest they can be vague on. And the 10 destinations of World Tour in post-crisis they had to agree on was Richard Dragon, Ducard, O Sensei, Lady Shiva, Zatara. Who am I thinking of? Wildcat.
Rachel Ghoul.
Rachel Ghoul. Who am I forgetting? There's a couple.
You can do it, Ben.
Damn it.
Wasn't he topped by some kind of Sherlock Holmes analog?
I mentioned Ducard already.
I think they said in one of the 70s that Batman tales, like, he was actually trained by Sherlock Holmes.
Okay, let's see.
But, yeah, you have guys like that. It's a lot of big names. I forget if it was an origin or if it's just said in passing, but I remember somebody saying something about him training in the same circus that had Boston Brand, like Deadman, before he became Deadman.
I think they sort of made that one vague because they also tried to say that that might have been the same circus as Dick Grayson. They didn't want those two to be connected because Dick Grayson's first Nightwing costume looks like the Deadman costume a little bit, kind of, if you squint your eyes. So they tried to link those two somehow.
Is that because they both have fucking
flared
collars?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Flared collars. So they're like, so they tried to make that, so they make that one vague, yes. But the point is there's like a list of 10 for sure stops on the World Tour, and the rest is basically vague of, he might have stopped here. We can't say for sure. We might be able to hint at it later, but we can't. We won't put it in concrete, so we don't write ourselves into a corner. And like
the vague ones, mostly like he trained with this person who knows magic, and he discovered that magic isn't his thing, kind of thing.
Like Jason Blood was one of those vague ones.
You go, Ben.
And I think Bronze Tiger was one of those vague ones, too.
I think he trained alongside the Bronze Tiger.
That was a vague one. It was one of those ones where we can't say for sure. There was a guy in the background shot that might have been a young Bruce Wayne, but we won't say for sure.
Yeah. Now, we got the necessary failing, we got the World Tour. A couple other elements one of the other most important elements is how, when he comes back to Gotham before he puts on the cape and cowl, you see the start of the family, and it's stuff that was in that way overwrought Batman Year One that the New 52 did, which is a very long form Batman origin story, which, while I found entertaining, could have been told in like half the issues it took. But you have stuff, essentially, I think when Bruce gets back to Gotham, he has to reassert his control of Wayne Enterprises because, he wants to have that access to the money and the tech.
The prodigal son. The prodigal son is what I'm talking
about. That's the words I was, thank you. The prodigal son aspect, where he meets Lucius Fox, first time he runs into Commissioner or Lieutenant Gordon at that time. Maybe he meets like a young Barbara, something like that.
Yeah.
And just Seeds and Dick.
Yeah, Gordon, see, that's the important thing. is Gordon, one thing, aspect of this is that year one introduces that is in part of later stories is Gordon is in exile. See, Bruce Wayne's coming back from his self-imposed exile. Gordon has in the middle of or at the beginning of his own exile.
It's more like in the middle of, because he's the only cop that won't take, isn't on the taste, and nobody trusts him because of that, because they think he's a snitch.
Yes. So
it's an island unto himself.
Yes. Yeah, so you have this. So that's another aspect that is being told and that is being carried forward since then that was introduced in year one. So these two have to sort of create an alliance between each other. It's not really a friendship. It's not a friendship that has that is formed until years and years of work, because it's an alliance of sorts. But yeah, it's, you know, Bruce returns from, you know, it's funny that it's a good point that Red brings up the Jesus analog with Bruce Wayne, but you know, this is really Bruce coming back from, as they would say with Moses, 40 years in the wilderness, from his exile, you know, while Gordon is in the middle of his. It's...
Well, I mean, if Batman's Jesus, I think it would be a little more apropos to say Gordon would be Joe. Like, he's just continually, you know, his views in the world and his concept of justice is constantly challenged until he's somewhat proven right with, you know, when he starts working with Batman, especially, you know, over the course of year one.
That's not really true with Gordon, because Gordon tastes temptation. Gordon does curse God. Gordon does do wrong.
Well, if he's not Joe, I just don't think that Jesus really works for Gordon. But, you know, and then you go from Gordon, especially in year one, I like how they made him human, because before year one, when I think of Commissioner Gordon before that, I think of, you know, well, golly, Batman, what are we going to do from the 66 series? Because as much as he'd been in the comics all the while, he never seemed like he was very effective. Like, he always seemed like, you know, poppycock Batman, the Riddler's got us stumped again. And with year one, he became a fucking threat. Like, you know, he's taking guys out, especially, like, my favorite scene with Gordon in year one is where he takes out Flass and leaves him trussed up in the side of the road in his underwear. Like, do not mess with James Gordon. You know, and I forget, when did Lucius, do you remember when Lucius Fox was first introduced into the comics?
It was not year one, that's for sure. Lucius Fox is a...
He had been in there since the 70s, I think, but... You know, I like how, you know, in the Nolan movies, we got, you know, the great Morgan Freeman, then you got...
1979.
Yeah, I just found that too. Batman 307. Louis Gossett Jr. voiced him in The Batman... And that's the name of the show, Ben, and you damn well know it.
You're a crap man.
And that's another thing. To find this ally, or two great allies like this, so early in his career, is like, you know, he meets Lucius, who's this, you know, corporate businessman par excellence. And it wasn't until, like, after year one that, you know, he needed... a technological Batman's Batman, as much as Alfred was Batman's Batman. You know, he needed Lucius to help with developing the tech and all that. And it wasn't till somewhere, I think in the late 90s, the early aughts, that they really turned the character into this inventor, this, you know, almost a mad scientist with some of the stuff he's come up with. Because before that, he was just this guy who looked after Wayne Enterprises for Bruce, and he had no idea that Bruce was actually Batman. You know, so it's when he became that techno whiz to help. I love that when they made him this character, like, not so much he wasn't a character before, just he became more integral to Bruce's story like that.
Well, with Lucius Fox, Lucius Fox being that was really something I think was introduced in Batman Begins as the man, you know, the man behind the screen.
And Bruce Wayne traveled through 2 miles of shit.
But the other thing to add about that is if you look at if you look at it, the other thing to add is I'm not really sure when was it that Alfred Pennyworth as a British agent was first introduced.
That was in the 80s.
70s or 80s, I think.
Because I remember Bruce mentioned it in year one when he was about to ring the bell. He mentioned that Alfred was a well-trained soldier, British MI6 agent, etc., and a trained army medic.
It was before year one that was introduced. It was something that people made up and then forgot because that was comics back then. Nobody gave a shit about fucking continuity.
Because the classic origin of first he was like fat Alfred, bumbling detective, and then he, over the course of a weekend, lost all that weight. And I just remember they famously killed him and brought him back as the Outsider, this weird Silver Age villain that plagued Batman for a while. And he was only brought back because they wanted to have Batman or Alfred in the Adam West series. It was sometime in the 70s when I think it was during the Denny O'Neill era there that you get into his history of having worked as a spy during World War II and before he became an actor and all that and came into the service of the Waynes. I know famously, or some would say infamously, have that Pennyworth series on TV right now where it's Alfred after he gets out of the army, but before he becomes the butler to Thomas and Martha Wayne, he's young and kind of a badass and starting his own, like...
I know there's a comic book series, I can't remember which one, where Alfred becomes the butler because his dad died or something.
That was in... Well, the one that I know of, and it could be others, there was this miniseries called The Untold Legend of Batman, which came out in, like, I think just post-Crisis, or might have been just before Crisis, and it has this scene where he just shows up after Bruce has become Batman and Dick has become Robin, and he's like, you'll find my papers in order, and I'll just get right to work, Master Wayne. And he's basically fulfilling the role that his dad played beforehand.
So he's like Jeeves.
Yeah, very very much a Jeeves.
I think the worst origin is the Batman.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Is where Alfred's like an indentured slave to the Waynes.
Yes.
Because his whole family is like fucking... have been working for the Waynes.
Yeah.
And I'm using air quotes when I'm saying working for the Waynes since the fucking foundation of Gotham.
Yes, because well, the fucking that was you're talking about a show that was fucking written by fucking Greg Weiss. What are you expecting?
No, you got that with Alfred and.
But
whether or not.
But my point is that something else added to the hot pot of Batman's origin that. That really helped the stew because one of my favorite little bits that they added, subtly added in, you know, the Nolan's movies is you have this, you know, subtle hints that Alfred is more than just a butler, where you have little bits of dialogue where Alfred's talking with Bruce about how we can set up a Dermy Corporation here and order these parts here in small batches and assemble them ourselves and no one will know. And it's like, how the hell would a butler know how to do this? it's like, well, obviously he's more than just a butler. And then you have in the second movie, The Dark Knight, where he's talking about me and a couple of my buddies are doing these things for an African warlord. It's like, well, what the fuck kind of buddies you have?
He's obviously
mercenary work.
Yes. It's like little stories like this. It's like you realize, holy shit, Alfred's a fucking secret agent. He had a double O number.
Yeah, and actually in the comics, at least prior to the New 52, one of Alfred's ancestors was the World War II spy, Mademoiselle Marie. So it's just part of the Pennyworth bloodline.
Like, speaking of the movies, like the Nolan movies, my favorite part of Alfred there is where he's kind of sees himself as Bruce's second father. Where in the final movie, he's like, I'm not fucking burying you.
Yes.
I'm done with this.
Yes.
Yeah,
I had to bury your parents. I'm not fucking burying you.
And Whitney, it's like, yeah, like he's got this father and Alfred, and then a third, you know, another member of the support group is Dr. Leslie Tompkins, who in a lot of origins, you know, whether it's in canon or not, she found Bruce just as the cops are arriving in Crime Alley, and she kind of looks after him and, you know, gets a hold of Alfred. And again, I don't think it was until after year one that, well, she was always a character in the comics. It was after year one, I think in the early 90s, where when they brought her back and they had her know that Bruce was Batman from the beginning, like from Jump Street.
It's because you had them orphanize Bruce. They seen them eyes. And they knew.
That 1,000-yard stare, nothing but blood and violence would fill your soul. But she basically becomes a mother, and like the constant voice in his head of like, you know, you shouldn't be doing this, you could do so much more with your life, which I think is a necessary counterbalance to Alfred's enabling him. Because as much as Alfred, you know, I wish you wouldn't do this to yourself, Bruce, and that or not, he still like caves and helps him do whatever. But Leslie was always this voice of like a counter argument. It's like, do something more with your life. Like, don't run out into the night with this death wish and, you know, potentially get yourself killed. And I was a huge fan of Leslie Tompkins up until she faked Spoiler's death just to teach Bruce a lesson during War Games.
Let's not discuss War Games.
Yeah, that's all I'm going to say about that particular storyline. But, I mean, you have Leslie Tompkins, and it was something the 70s and 80s that Batman had as far as the support group goes. Like, he had these, like, he had his version of the Baker Street Irregulars in Gotham City that he helped set up before and after he becomes Batman, of, like, you know, the informants and that. Which, again, as much as I like the idea, I have to offer that this is essentially ripping off the Shadows network of agents, because, dear God, the ripoff just doesn't stop.
Yes.
Well, the ripoff, being a ripoff of the Shadow is well known. If you take the first issues of Batman, and then go to a library, look through old news clippings at the same time, and you look at the comic pages where the Shadow was being published, you'll see that they literally traced every fucking panel.
Yeah.
You're not revealing anything.
People are like, oh, Bill Finger and Randy Batman. Bill Finger, so important. Bill Finger traced. Bill Finger's a fucking tracer.
Was it? I thought Bill Finger was the writer. Jesus, I get that mixed up a lot.
Bill Finger and Bob Kane both did some writing and some art duty. There was no just one writer, just one artist, and anyone who claims either way is lying. But anyways, that's neither here nor there. Any final thoughts on Batman Origins and favorite origins of Batman?
I think you pick one, you like it, go with that. Like I said, my favorite is Batman 89. I just love that idea. But I think the simpler, like, year one's the best origin, because the simpler you tell the story with a few details, you know, a little embellishment, a little bit of spice is great, but you definitely don't want to do Batman year zero, just unnecessarily complicate and drag the story out for longer than it has to.
Yes. It's
less is more, stupid.
Yes.
Red?
Favorite origin of Batman? Probably the animated series. Because
Mask of the Phantasm?
No. Fuck Mask of the Phantasm. They never covered his origin at all. You get clever quips like, I was never a child. I haven't been a child since I was 8 years old, kind of thing. But you don't have to watch Martha and fucking Thomas Wayne shot in a fucking alley. It's not like Spider-Man Unlimited, where it opens up and you see Uncle Ben fucking shot every fucking episode.
I mean, while we're on Thomas and Martha dying, what's your favorite version of Thomas and Martha dying?
You want us to pick our favorite fucking snuff film, JT? You fucking
yes, sicko. I'm gonna be that asshole. All
right, my favorite has to be fucking JLU for The Man Who Has Everything, when Bruce is hit by the Dark Mercy, and he has the flashback where his father's actually fighting back, and then while Wonder Woman is slowly peeling it off, it slowly turns dark.
You must be reading my mind, because that's my favorite too.
My favorite is probably Long Halloween, where Joe Chill is hired to kill the Waynes, because Bruce, well, the Wayne family have a long history of working with the mafia, whereas Thomas Wayne was the one Wayne who wanted to get out and be legit, and the mafia couldn't take that, so they sent fucking Joe Chill to take him out. And during Long Halloween, you actually see Falcone try and bring Bruce Wayne back into the fold.
Just reminding him of the family history and all that.
Yeah. He even goes so far to say, I think Bruce Wayne is the son I've never had, next to his own son.
Just like, wow, Dad, thanks. Like, the when you talk about Joe Chill getting hired, again, going back to Chill of the Night, you know how he's like, yeah, just make it look like an accident, and then he kills Thomas and Martha Wayne. When Batman goes to like try and get the name of the killer out of him as he's dying in the hospital, and he has that moment of regret, saying, you know, he's just supposed to kill the doc, you know, it wasn't right to leave the kid without a mom. Something that hadn't been done before. Usually it's just like boom, boom, dead. You know, crime goes on in Gotham City. But yeah.
All right. Well, that's our breakdown of our favorite Batman origins. This show's Ben.
JT from Saskatoon.
Red Ink.
We're saying goodnight.
So long.
Peace out.